trabajo que ocupará el cónclave. Entre sus actividades destacó el diálogo con el relator especial sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, James Anaya, y la presentación que hará la Comisión Africana sobre Derechos Humanos y los Pueblos Indígenas. Añadió que igualmente se tratará el derecho al agua y explicó la importancia de este para los indígenas.
El derecho al agua para nuestros pueblos y naciones indígenas no se limita al acceso a agua limpia y saneamiento. Está muy vinculado a otros derechos, incluyendo el derecho a la libre determinación, la sobrevivencia, la salud, territorio, recursos, prácticas culturales y espirituales.
Por otro lado, añadió,
también habrá una discusión sobre la Conferencia Mundial sobre Pueblos Indígenas que se celebrará en 2014, así como sobre el proceso Río Más 20.
Rebecca Greenspan, administradora asociada del Programa de las Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo, resaltó la importancia del trabajo del Foro para la Defensa de los Derechos de los Indígenas.
Porque no puede haber un desarrollo humano pleno donde persiste la discriminación, la injusticia y la exclusión social, y al mismo tiempo no haya reconocimiento del valor para la sociedad que todos los grupos desde sus cosmovisiones aportan. El desarrollo humano consiste en que las personas y los pueblos cuenten con opciones que les permitan determinar su propia vida, sin discriminación y en pleno ejercicio de sus derechos individuales y colectivos.
La edición de este año del Foro Permanente de Cuestiones Indígenas sesionará hasta el 27 de mayo. Evaluará cómo se han implementado las recomendaciones de los foros anteriores en temas de desarrollo económico y social y del medio ambiente. Jorge Millares, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
La corporación petrolera anglo-holandesa Shell reconoció causar mucho daño no deseado e innecesario en el mundo con sus operaciones. Esa fue la respuesta a un documento presentado por la organización ambiental Amigos de la Tierra Internacional. El informe se presentó el martes en La Haya, Holanda, durante la Asamblea General Anual de Accionistas de la compañía Shell. Radio Mundo Real reporta.
El informe destaca 12 casos del accionar de Shell en 5 continentes, en Canadá, Nigeria, Brasil, Filipinas y Australia, entre otros países. Muestra los impactos climáticos y ambientales de sus operaciones petroleras y gasíferas y su amenaza a la vida de diversas comunidades locales. Pero el documento también denuncia casos en los que la empresa es señalada por violación de derechos humanos, de leyes nacionales e internacionales, soborno, corrupción, esclavitud e interferencia en la política para asegurarse ganancias. En tanto, el coordinador de la campaña de corporaciones de Amigos de la Tierra Internacional, Paul de Klerk, dijo que espera que las promesas en la fe de ratas que redactamos para Shell se vuelvan realidad. La compañía es consciente del daño que está causando al medio ambiente y de la violación a los derechos de las comunidades locales en la que está involucrada. Queremos que Shell tome medidas para compensar este daño y evitar otros futuros, agregó.
Conmemoró el pueblo salvadoreño el 31 aniversario de la matanza del río Sumpul cometida por el ejército y paramilitares. Ricardo Martínez reporta.
Esta vereda es el final de un largo camino que llega al río Sumpul, en el departamento de Chalatenango, al oriente del Salvador. Como hace 31 años, decenas de familias caminaron horas, pero esta vez no lo hicieron para sobrevivir a los ataques del entonces ejército, la Guardia Nacional y grupos paramilitares, sino para conmemorar a sus familiares asesinados por ellos.
Más de 600 personas fueron asesinadas por tropas, élites y de paramilitares de los países de El Salvador y Honduras en esta zona, en esta región.
Se concentraron por comunidad alrededor de la tumba colectiva, donde yacen los restos de campesinos y población civil de la zona. Aquí, los pobladores dieron testimonio sobre los sucesos que fueron considerados por las Naciones Unidas como una seria violación del derecho internacional humanitario, aún en la impunidad.
Y duele pensar hasta qué nivel fue capaz de llegar la Fuerza Armada, cuando aquí se había concentrado una cantidad enorme de gente de la población civil.
Con obras teatrales, conocidas aquí como teatrillo, recrearon los momentos más conmovedores. La masacre se ejecutó con el apoyo de militares hondureños. La táctica militar aplicada fue la denominada yunque y martillo, con la cual fue ejecutada la persecución a la población civil por parte de grupos irregulares armados y la contención de la huida por los ejércitos salvadoreño y hondureño. El resultado fue un genocidio.
Tenemos que venir a recordar la memoria de ellos, porque sabemos que no fue nada fácil lo que ellos vivieron, tampoco quisiéramos que se volviese a repetir.
De estos sucesos nunca se realizaron investigaciones por los gobiernos anteriores y los responsables nunca fueron señalados. Los familiares de las víctimas demandan al gobierno del presidente Mauricio Funes encauzar la reparación a las víctimas. Y así es como las comunidades al oriente de El Salvador conmemoran y llaman a no olvidar. Exigen la derogación de la ley de amnistía con el fin de que se delinden responsabilidades sobre los crímenes de lesa humanidad. Ricardo Martínez, Telesur, Chalatenango, El Salvador.
Bueno, más que nada el señor era una persona bastante transparente, bastante honesta. Regresó la dignidad al pueblo de Nicaragua.
Nicaragüenses y sus aliados y amigos en varias regiones del mundo conmemoran este 18 de mayo el 118 cumpleaños de Augusto César Sandino, nacido en Niquinojomo, departamento de Masaya, en Nicaragua. Sandino trabajó como minero en Nicaragua, Honduras y México, y en este último se asoció con antiimperialistas, anarquistas y comunistas, y a su regreso a Nicaragua llevó consigo un cariño hacia el legado indígena de los latinoamericanos. Catherine Hoyt es codirectora de la Red de Apoyo a Nicaragua, organismo con sede en Washington, Distrito de Columbia. Ella dice que Sandino creía firmemente en la creación de un frente unido conformado por nacionalistas, izquierdistas, comunistas, socialistas, anarquistas y espiritualistas. Después de choques frontales contra los infantes de marina estadounidenses, su ejército en defensa de la soberanía nacional de Nicaragua optó por la lucha guerrillera, que con su conocimiento superior del terreno y capacidad de inteligencia forzó la retirada de las fuerzas de ocupación, a pesar de que éstas hacían uso de la aviación para bombardear al grupo rebelde.
There's a wonderful book by José Román. He called his book Maldito País because the gringos, the marines...
Hoyt señala que el escritor José Román escribió un libro sobre la lucha armada de la época, el cual tituló Maldito País. Ese nombre fue inspirado por los asediados infantes de marina norteamericanos, pues cuando caían en un pantano o eran sorprendidos por la guerrilla de Sandino, decían God damn country, maldito país. De nuevo, Felipe Aguirre, del Comité Pro Uno, un grupo comunitario de Los Ángeles.
Yo creo que es una persona que debe estar honrado por sus contribuciones a la lucha, porque trajo una visión diferente al país de los más pobres de Centroamérica, y yo creo que eso es muy importante.
Hoy dice que las primeras armas que utilizó Sandino para su guerrilla fueron extraídas de las aguas de la bahía de Bluefields con ayuda de unas prostitutas. Sandino limpió los fusiles y con ellos dio comienzo la lucha de liberación de Nicaragua. Eduardo Villanueva es un abogado defensor de los derechos humanos en la isla caribeña de Puerto Rico.
Sandino fue asesinado por el somocismo con ayuda de la intervención de Estados Unidos, pero sus ideales, los ideales de libertad y justicia social para su pueblo, no pudieron ser asesinados, y por eso eventualmente la revolución sandinista.
To his homeland, Nicaragua, his contributions were to give an example.
Para Nicaragua, Latinoamérica y el mundo, dice Catherine Hoyt, las contribuciones de Sandino son un ejemplo de lucha por la justicia y por la independencia. No obstante las repetidas muestras de heroísmo y amor por la patria expresados por libertadores del mundo, dice Villanueva, los poderosos no parecen entender el mensaje.
Es una tragedia que la humanidad no aprende, repita la historia, y se sigan sucediendo los golpes de Estado y se siga tronchando la voluntad democráticamente expresada de los pueblos, que es que los gobiernos deben existir para las mayorías, no para las oligarquías, no para un pequeño grupo que se enriquezca a costa de la mayoría.
La elección a la presidencia de Franklin Delano Roosevelt motivó a Sandino a negociar con el gobierno nicaragüense la disposición de las armas y el retorno a la vida civil. La oligarquía nicaragüense y sus aliados en Washington, molestos por el prestigio político de Sandino, ordenaron su muerte el 21 de febrero de 1934, mientras se encontraba negociando el final de las hostilidades con el presidente Juan Bautista Sacasa, fue asesinado por Anastasio Somoza, jefe de la Guardia Nacional. 2 años después del asesinato de Sandino, Anastasio Somoza tomó el poder en un golpe de Estado, iniciando una dictadura que duraría más de 30 años, la misma que fue derrocada por el Ejército Sandinista de Liberación Nacional en 1979. El defensor de los derechos humanos boricua agrega que los opresores tampoco han aprendido que pueden matar al líder, pero no la idea libertaria que lleva dentro.
Los dictadores y los imperios no acaban de aprender que a las personas, a los líderes que representan ideas de justicia y de libertad y de dignidad, se les puede asesinar, pero a las ideas no.
En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento al Foro Argentino de Radios Comunitarias, a Telesur y a la Radio del Sur de Venezuela y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Y buenas tardes, señores y señores, y señoritas también. Eso es el programa en inglés, entonces vamos a hablar inglés. Entonces, I'm going to talk English, and that's... one day when I have a translator, we'll do bilingual. But in the meantime, you're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and in the studio with me is my guest soon-to-be, who's keeping a close eye on the proceedings to make sure that he's properly introduced. I'll be introducing him again when he's actually going to give his... his shtick, or I should say his memorial to tribute, if you will, to a San Francisco a peace and justice, homeless activist, community heroine, if you will, Pat Carey, who I think I actually knew and worked with Food Not Bombs up in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s. But who knows, because my memory is a thing of the past at the moment. Anyway, stay tuned for Free Radio's Bathroom Spares Broadsides. Today is the 19th of May, 2011. We're going to be having a couple special elements. I'm going to be reading from Lost in Space, Criminalization, Globalization, and Urban Ecology of Homelessness. And in the studio with me is Paul Bernardino, who's going to be introducing himself in just a moment after this brief musical introduction.
The homeless, a problem for only one reason. Their present raises the question, who owns a land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our present raises the question, who owns a land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land?
Yes, and home is, where is home anyway? I don't know. Or you happen to crash on a particular night where they can't throw you out if you go back. Lots of definitions. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio, soon to be with me, though taking a leak in the back, is Paul Bernardino, who is an activist from San Francisco, describes himself as an anti-fascist researcher concerned with suppressed history and other incidentals, which he will go into in some detail. He's also a potential Free Radio broadcaster if the Stalinist authorities let him pass and if he continues in this questionable quest. And we'll see if he does as life continues. I actually ran into Paul, I guess, 30 years ago in the 80s, way back in the time when, I guess, the Nicaragua-Contra struggle was going on, where there was Oliver North and May Brussels was broadcasting from Carmel, concerns about conspiracy theories. He'll give you some details on that. He was the resident pamphleteer and expert on such issues. Used to be at a lot of the political protests up in San Francisco. And, in fact, he's in the studio now. He's returned, bladder relieved. How are you doing there, Paul?
Fine. Thank you for having me here today.
Oh, you're welcome, man. You're welcome. You've been doing what for the last 40 years?
Well, I have been, like a number of other people, I started as a political activist clipping newspaper articles and filing them away.
At least you file them. I clip them and then I just throw them in a box. It's not working too well for me.
I became really good at keeping files, filing away, and keeping files on people who should be kept files on. They keep files on us. Let's keep files on them.
When did you begin all this filing?
In the early 70s. Early 1970s, and that was what got me into document hunting, mining of documents. So once I started reading newspaper articles and keeping track of the categorizing them, and newspaper articles on Reverend Jim Jones' People's Temple in San Francisco. I used to live just a few blocks from his temple headquarters.
You were
in San Francisco.
A fan of the Reverend?
No, I was in the neighborhood, and they would come knocking on my door in San Francisco on Sanchez Street, peddling their prayer cloths, and then it came out of the news that Reverend Jim Jones was a fraud. He was just a scam, and his temple was just several blocks north of my residence in San Francisco. And
he had close connections with Moscone and the Board of Supervisors and the, you know, the liberal regime that was truncated by two assassinations. Soon after, in 1978, Milk and Moscone were both shot dead.
Yes, that is, I have been writing about the very subject, the unsolved assassination of Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone. And,
wait a minute, wasn't that Dan White, the wild and crazy cop?
The research that I have
found. And supervisor
found,
as well, actually.
Yeah,
or
Dan
maybe he
White.
Was a fireman? Was he a fireman or a cop?
He was a police officer in San Francisco.
Wanted to get rid of the damn liberals? That was the direct
action? He was a very conservative member of the Roman Catholic Church, conservative Irish. And to make a long story short, the documents that I have found and others, May Brussels, Richard Galliott, researcher into Jonestown, People's Temple, John Judge, researched into this subject, have found and others have found that it is the U.S. intelligence establishment that was behind the assassination of Harvey Milk, gay rights activist, and the mayor of San Francisco, Mayor George Moscone. And they
catapulting Dianne Feinstein into the mayorship and into the senatorship, which she now disgraces daily.
The Chronicle newspaper, 1978, I was sitting in a restaurant on Castro Street. I opened up the Chronicle newspaper, and the Chronicle paper says, Dianne Feinstein orders the coroner, San Francisco coroner, to destroy the bloodstained underwear of Harvey Milk. And that bloodstained underwear of Harvey Milk, if it had gotten to the courtroom, would have been Exhibit A, which, if under close examination by the jury in a court of law, which the destruction of the underwear of Milk would have shown that he was assassinated execution style, and that there was a group of people, not Dan White. He pulled the trigger, but who set him up to pull the trigger?
And the now, how would the bloodstained underwear have shown who set him up?
Well, the bloodstained underwear of Harvey Milk would have shown that Dan White shot Harvey Milk up the rectum with Dan White shot him up the rectum with his loaded gun, execution style. And he ordered Dan White, first went into the mayor's office, shot him in the head and chest, and then he went right down the hall into, by the way, when he shot the mayor of San Francisco, Mayor George Moscone, the mayor's office at that very moment was the political epicenter of the Reverend Jim Jones People's Temple, which documents show was a CIA MK-Ultra mind control operation and there are a number of reports in the press, and just one block, two blocks away from City Hall was where there was a federal court case regarding the Reverend Jim Jones People's Temple cult at the federal building, two blocks from City Hall. And in this federal court case, it was a court case, a federal case against Larry Layton, who was, from all indications, was framed to take the fall as being the mastermind behind the assassination of Reverend Jim Jones.
Now let's go back to the dates. Although this is a ancient history and not
highly relevant right now.
We'll have to hear about that in a moment. Uh-huh. But the Jim Jones, of course, was the fellow who provided free but somewhat potent Kool-Aid to his many followers in Jonestown,
yes,
resulting in a mass suicide,
yes,
or homicide, depending on how you want
they
to look at
it. They were shot and poisoned, and they were both shot and poisoned, and some of them were just their throats were slit.
It was in the fall of 1978.
Yeah, yes, it was the November. It was middle of November 1978.
And when did Moscone and Milk get it?
2 weeks later, the Dan White shot the mayor of San Francisco, and then walked down the hall shot Harvey Milk execution style. And which, if his blood-stained underwear was allowed to get to court, and if Feinstein had not ordered the coroner to destroy the blood-stained underwear, that's jail time, by the way. It's federal offense.
Not for Dianne Feinstein?
Well, she's got people upstairs that have been protecting her all these years. And those people upstairs were probably with the U.S. intelligence establishment, which Congressman Leo Ryan's office found out that, indeed, it was the Central Intelligence Agency, Congressman Leo Ryan of San Mateo County.
He was killed in Jonestown.
He was killed in Jonestown.
In Guyana. Around this mass suicide of
at the airport.
Homicide.
And when he was, the second that he was shot by this team of the White Guard, Reverend Jim Jones Temple White Guard, from a flatbed truck, they shot the Congressman Leo Ryan, the first congressperson to be assassinated in the line of duty, the NBC...
But hopefully not the last. Well, what am I saying? Forget I said that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The NBC camera kept rolling. The cameraman of NBC, which is KRON San Francisco, was shot dead also, just two or three feet from the Congressman Leo Ryan, who was assassinated, and another camera person. So the NBC camera kept rolling and caught on film the CIA station chief of the Jonestown operation caught on film ordering his underlings to clean up the bloody mess and get this stuff out of here. Get these people out of
there. This is a film you have seen.
Pardon?
You saw this film?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I gave my copy. There are a number of copies. I gave my copy to the May Brussels Archive. And then, so Congressman Leo Ryan's office had collected documents. He opened up a congressional, an official congressional investigation into Jonestown, People's Temple, Reverend Jim Jones.
Prior to his assassination.
Yes, just months before the assassination of this these hits on the congressman and the cameraman from NBC, et cetera.
Is it your suggestion that the reason he was, should we say, bumped off was because it was exposing what was essentially a government run mind control experiment?
Yes, that Jim Jones and his People's Temple were a CIA MK Ultra mind control operation. That is the research that Congressman Leo Ryan and his aide Joe Holsinger uncovered. And Joe Holsinger, May of 1980, held a press conference at KPFA Radio. I have a transcript and I have an audio cassette tape in our my files, including Mae Brussel. It's been on KPFA. So when Joe Holsinger, I was at this KPFA press conference in May of 1980 with at this Black Psychiatrists National Convention. And they were with him at this press conference, and he announced to all the world that, yes, indeed, unfortunately, it is true, and he was holding documents in hand and presented the documents at the press conference, that the Jim Jones People's Temple was indeed a Central Intelligence Agency mind control operation.
There was immediately an apology from the CIA followed by full restitution.
No, because in the Chronicle, when I was back at the same restaurant on Castro Street, which I've been doing a lot of political activism on, and other neighborhoods, Haight-Ashbury, and I opened up the Chronicle, and an article in the Chronicle says CIA orders all investigation into Jonestown to be closed down permanently.
Well, naturally, you know, we don't want embarrassing. I mean, you know, we have a national
incriminating evidence to come out.
Here. You know? I mean, and, be reasonable.
I mean, give them a break. So, I mean, is that a clue? Who's running our country?
This is 31 years, and actually more than that, years old. Who gives a shit? How does this relate to anything in the 2011 years? But it's a new era. Obama has given us the audacity of hope.
He appoints these people that are running the intelligence, CIA. He appoints them. And it is...
you mean Leon Panetta, our favorite son down here in the Monterey Bay area.
Well, he's part of the problem, not... Obama and that Panetta, they're part of the problem, not part of the solution. Unfortunately, I hate to spoil your party. They're Obama's party and all the fun, but facts are facts.
Now, just what is the relation of this 31-year-old press conference by Leo Ryan's aide, or the, for that matter, 33-year-old shootings of two politicians and... One doped up, crazy, wild, you know, Jim Jones guy.
The culprits are serial killers. They are.
We like to think of them as patriots, if you don't mind.
Well, and they are serial killers, and when a serial killer is not stopped from murdering, and in this case, mass murder, they will go on to engage in other and deadlier and much bigger projects, like 9/11. And the President of the United States, Bush Sr., admitted in his press conference of May 16th of 2003 that he and his administration had prior knowledge of 9/11. You mean
Bush Jr., don't you?
Bush Jr.
The little guy, with the mission accomplished guy, that one?
Yes, Bush Jr. admitted in his own press conference, his mask dropped off his face, and he under pressure from the press, who already knew that he had prior knowledge. He says, "Mr. President, did you have prior knowledge of 9/11? He says, "Yes, I did, and my administration, and so did the Democrats, all of the Democratic Party people." And so all of Washington, D.C. was hush-hush and a buzz about the prior knowledge of 9/11. For the president to have such prior knowledge and not do anything about it and to allow it and facilitate the mass murder of 9/11 and its aftermath, that is an impeachable offense.
Now, wait a minute. Isn't a remodeling sometimes necessary, even in New York City? I mean, those ugly towers. I mean, they stuck out. I mean, come on.
Weinstein, the owner of the Twin Towers that was crashed into by the two planes, he admitted in a taped TV interview that he gave the okay for those buildings to be blown up. and the a group of architects, Richard Cage and his group of professional architects, have found that there were bombs planted in those buildings before 9/11.
Telling me the reason we go into all this Jim Jones Moscone milk stuff is because you're claiming that the shadowy Central Intelligence Agency was behind this, and they were also behind this so-called truthy, poothy analysis of the 9/11.
Yes.
The reason we should. Well, the CIA has been behind many, many things. Why should we focus on Moscone,
Milken,
Jones?
Right now, the President Obama's own chief foreign policy advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, has admitted just 2 months before 9/11.
Wait a minute, he was Carter's foreign policy advisor.
Under Carter, Brzezinski and CIA, according to the congressional record and press reports the past 25 years, it was the CIA under Carter with Brzezinski, now Obama's chief foreign policy advisor, CIA and Brzezinski, created Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. He was created by them and to be their instrument of repression against anybody that gets in their way.
Wait a minute. Weren't they the patriots who brought an end to the Soviet Empire in Afghanistan? Aren't they the people fighting vigilantly on the side of the Libyan freedom fighters today, as we speak?
No, they are agents and agent provocateurs. They one down the street, they're one thing. Then they send them down the street to another street to do something else. So they are instruments of U.S. foreign policy.
You're not suggesting that Osama bin Laden was some kind of CIA dupe?
It's in the congressional record and in press reports the past 25 years. It's been in the anarchist press, the left press, the mainstream press, the right-wing press, every press you can imagine, the past 25, since the late
70s. And what does any of this have to do with the homeless and civil rights, for
because
God's sake?
The money is that could be better spent over here in this country and in other areas of the world to help. That is why there is homelessness, poverty, degradation, and the underclass is increasing and expanding. And that is why people are eating out of garbage cans and living in dumpsters. It's a nightmare.
Or dying in dumpsters.
Dying in dumpsters,
case,
living in dumpsters, whatever. And the by the way, there is a an order of Catholic nuns. They are doing wonderful work. They're founded by Mother Teresa in Calcutta, India. And they have branches, all their missionary sisters of charity. They are truly a great religious order of the of nuns of the Roman Catholic Church. But in San Francisco, they at their soup kitchen on 3rd Street near the AT&T Park, they do not allow any of these poor, homeless, hungry people. Many of them are desperate and with many different personal problems. Are not the sisters of Mother Teresa's Order of Nuns do not allow any of the homeless there to use their toilet facility at all. How do I know? I went down there and found out.
When
myself.
Was that? When did you make that visit?
A week ago.
We were thinking of denying you access to our toilet facility because we wonder about your... You know, we all know that the homeless are dirty, don't wash their hands, and cause problems and pee-pee on the floor.
Well, I talked to the sister provincial of the Missionary Sisters of Charity. I talked to the nuns there, and I talked to the sister provincial, Sister Mary Rachel. Who has her office in Pacifica, just near San Francisco. And she very calmly explained to me that the reason they don't allow the homeless and hungry at their soup kitchen to use their toilet facility is because they found one or two drug people shooting up drugs and cooking crack in their toilet.
Well, it's a perfectly reasonable explanation.
Yes,
the rest
that,
of the homeless people can hold their water. I mean, that, one rotten apple spoils the barrel.
One or two rotten apples. But I mentioned to the sister, the provincial superior of their order of nuns, that they should continue letting people not continue. They should resume letting these homeless and hungry people in their soup kitchen use their toilet by simply having a monitor, a person stand at the men's room, a woman standing at the women's room, chop the upper part of the door in half so they can see inside, keep track, so there's no drug dealing, no drug activity, shooting up drugs, cooking crack, cooking speed, whatever, in the toilet, so that the there are people urinating and defecating outside of their soup kitchen on Third Street. This soup kitchen I'm mentioning now, because they are not allowed to use the toilet facilities in the which they do have. They've been there 20 years. They, as their sister provincial, Sister Mary Rochelle, said that they are closing down their soup kitchen at the end of July, and they are getting a newer and bigger and better place. And they, she said, they may possibly at their new location let the homeless and hungry use. At their new soup kitchen, use their toilet facilities.
Well, what they can do is simply cavity searches before that in order to assure that no unseemly behavior occurs.
Yes, well, it's a difficult to solve problem, but I spoke this afternoon with the pastor, the Franciscan priest, Father Tony King of St. Boniface Church, who has the St. Anthony's dining room there. And he said, well, he said, I should call the Archdiocese of San Francisco, Catholic headquarters in San Francisco, and take my complaint to them. But
St. Anthony's does allow people to use their bathroom.
Yes, yes.
That is the big meal in San Francisco, the St. Anthony's dining room.
And they've greatly, St. Anthony's dining room is doing great work. Father Bodecker died. I was at his funeral 15 years ago. At St. Boniface Church. They are doing really great work for the homeless, hungry, many different types of social services that they do there at St. Anthony's Foundation, including the Missionary Sisters of Charity. But they should let the people, their clientele, use the toilet
facilities.
Let
my people pee. I mean,
let
I have to agree
with
you.
Let my people go, yeah.
Right.
I mean,
you know what they say, it's a privilege to pee from Urinetown, the musical.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm talking with the notorious and perhaps soon-to-be regular commentator Paul Bernardino, who has a website which can be found at...
www.stoptheFourthReich.com, which will be back online around June 1st. Again, it's stop, stoptheFourthReich.com.
T-H or T-H-E?
Stop the Fourth Reich.com.
Sorry. Yeah. Never mind.
It's an anti-fascist, anti-war website, and reflects the work that I and others are currently involved in. We do research into suppressed history, covert operations, MK Ultra. We're now, it's by the way, MK Ultra is now has recycled into what's now called HARP and DARPA. It's a high tech aerial mind control. They manipulate the weather. It's they are HARP and DARPA is headquartered in Alaska. Reportedly, President Clinton reportedly...
You will be going into all this in great detail on your own show. My show is concerned with other issues. But for those who are interested in this, you can call in and ask a few pungent questions to Paul before I turn him over to the CIA guy outside at 427-3772. That's the call-in number here is 427-3772-831 if you're outside the area code. 831-427-3772. And Paul will be happy to answer all your questions before he is unceremoniously taken into the bathroom and shot through the... Well, we won't go into the grim details, and we'll try not to expose those to the sensibilities of our Santa Cruz. Because in Santa Cruz, we know we're all liberal here. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the Sisters of Charity, I believe, and Mother Teresa. I believe that was one of the reasons Keith McHenry began serving Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, is because the Sisters of Charity moved from their spot, I think, in the Civic Center Plaza, which is an area in the center of San Francisco, actually located right outside the mayor's office, or across the street from the mayor's office, from that convenient, relatively centralized and convenient spot for people to get food, all the way down to the boonies of Third Avenue. And uh-huh. This was done at the behest of Mayor Feinstein, the same Feinstein we've been talking mm-hmm. about, who was mayor right before Keith began massive feeding with Food Not Bombs in San Francisco under Mayor Agnos in 1988. Any comment on that?
Well, the these missionary sisters of charity, and this is going to lead up to, I want to lead this into a to mentioning and talking about Pat Carey, homeless advocate and voice of the voiceless and the oppressed extraordinaire. Pat Carey was very, very much like Mother Teresa of Calcutta and St. Francis of Assisi. They would go directly to the most rejected, the most outcast, the most oppressed, the most despised of their society, of their time. Mother Teresa in Calcutta, St. Francis of Assisi went to the lepers in Assisi, Italy, in the 12th century. And Pat Carey went to the homeless and the downtrodden out in the streets where they were sleeping around Safeway, and homeless and abandoned, lonely Vietnam vets, people with psychological problems, people who were thrown out of their house for being gay or lesbian or transsexual or transvestite. Pat Carey, she pushed the envelope. She offered her whole, it was her whole way of life. It was her everyday activity.
How do you spell her name?
Pat, P-A-T C-A-R-E-Y. And I knew her since 1983. I was doing leafleting, leaflet tabling in front of Safeway, where she was living. She was living in an apartment nearby called the. It was used to be a gay bathhouse, and she moved in right after it was purchased. Ceased being a gay bathhouse with. Gay erotic wall murals painted all over. She was an artist, and she landed in San Francisco with her two daughters in 1970 at the Goodman Building. She was instrumental. She got the ball rolling to get the Goodman Building at Vinesse and Gary Street to eventually, in the late 70s, to be declared a historic landmark. The Goodman Building is a Victorian building. And it was from that experience, digging up documents, mining archives, and neglected data, documents in libraries, the water department, to get the Goodman Building declared a national landmark. She applied that experience and document hunting to join with Mae Brussel by the she knew Mae Brussel since they were living across the street from one another in
Mae
Monterey.
Brussels was a Carmel, California broadcaster who did a lot of research into
and broadcast
government conspiracies and broadcast her research on the air.
Mae Brussel was she was broadcasting from KAZU in a studio very similar to the studio here. She was a Jewish woman. Her father was the rabbi of the Wilshire Boulevard Synagogue in Los Angeles, and she. She started researching the day after John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas. She found that there's some unsolved, unanswered questions and research that needs to be done and documents dug up about the JFK's assassination, Martin Luther King's assassination, etc. And so she started researching the day after JFK was assassinated, and she began her radio broadcast in by the late 70s in at KAZU near Carmel, California. And then she was living, Mae Brussel was living across the street from Pat Carey at the time. Pat Carey was raising her two young daughters, and Mae Brussel across the street in her separate house was raising her three daughters. And they had husbands that separated from just a year or two before that. And so when Pat moved up to San Francisco and did the research on the Goodman Building, and then she introduced herself to me in 1980, and I participated with Pat and other of Mae Brussel's friends and supporters and a network of anti-war activists who were surrounding Mae Brussel and her broadcast to help them promote and distribute and to promote the research of Mae Brussel and her associates. That was
now the kind of stuff you're going to be talking about on your show. What do you intend to actually do, other than dredge up ancient, musty conspiracy theories?
Well, it's not what's passed as prologue. These people who have been involved, these government agencies that have been involved, documented, involved with the coups, assassinations, state-sponsored terrorism, are fugitives from justice. They are serial killers. They have not been brought to justice. And
you're not referring to our Fuhrer, I mean our president.
Well, unfortunately, I hate to spoil Obama's supporters' party, but the party's over. They hurt it crashed their party. Sorry, that's documents are documents, facts are facts.
So, you know, I'm actually going to ask Keith McHenry, who will be calling in about 20 minutes. From Orlando, Florida, where there is, as regular listeners know, a struggle to fight back and with direct action regarding the right of people to serve free food to poor people and to accompany the free food with a political message, in this case, the banner Food, Not Bombs, a commentary on the national priorities of the country. And we talked with Keith a couple times in the last month. There is now apparently action happening in Orlando. I'm going to read a couple of stories. Here's one. Anti-poverty group defies ban on feeding homeless in Orlando's park. Food Not Bombs members say they broke the law. The city says they didn't. By Kate Santich, Orlando Sentinel. Members of Orlando Food Not Bombs gathered at Lake Eola Park on Wednesday evening. Last night, to serve dinner to the poor and homeless, an act they expected would get them arrested. But Orlando officials weren't biting. The group said it was defying the city's ban on large group feedings in downtown parks, a law that was unanimously backed by a federal appeals court last month. Instead of an arrest, a woman from the city's parks department arrived to give members a permit, though the group never applied for one. We crumpled it up and tried to give it back to her, said Mark Stephen, a longtime member of the group, but she just let it fall to the ground. The vegan meal continued as scheduled, but the anti-poverty crusaders, plaintiffs in the unsuccessful lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the city's 2006 law, made it clear the fight is far from over. I have a calling to do this, Stephen said. The hardest part is explaining to my 4-year-old daughter why she could not come with me tonight, that there were people who actually didn't want us to bring food to the homeless. City spokeswoman Heather Fagan, that seems appropriate, said officials had decided to issue the permit because Food Not Bombs members had widely publicized Wednesday's dinner at the parks by alerting the media and posting the event on the internet. Under the Orlando law, feeding more than 25 people in a downtown city park requires a permit, and groups can apply for only 2 permits each year. We feel like the park is where the people should be, said Food Not Bombs member Eric Montanez, who was arrested under the law in 2007 but later acquitted. The real issue is that the city just doesn't want the homeless here, but they don't want to be shown arresting veterans and other people who are just serving food either. Equally worrisome, Montanez said, is the fact that other cities around the state are now enacting similar bans. Fagan said that ultimately police would arrest those who continue to violate the law, but there are ways to be arrested without dragging people away in handcuffs. Perhaps tasing them, tackling them, sending them tickets in the mail and then sending police to do no-knock entry. There are various ways of dealing with arrests, I suppose. The law carries a penalty of 60 days in jail, a $500 fine, or both. Teresa McDonald, a 49-year-old homeless woman who uses a wheelchair, said she relies on the Food Not Bombs group and others for her meals because she can't afford even the small fees charged by local homeless shelters. It's just not fair. And there are some comments. There are actually 127 comments on this story, although it's only a day old. One says, I'm tired of these racist governments trying to stop the feeding of homeless people. Down on their luck, government should be providing food and shelter for homeless with all the tax money they have. I don't understand those of you, writes another, who criticize Orlando Food Not Bombs for not taking care of all the homeless people's needs. Do you go to the doctor to get a job? Do you go to church to get your teeth filled? Do you go to a restaurant to get your clothing? Different organizations provide different services. They don't all provide everything. Even so, the Wednesday food sharing people get to eat. They can see a social worker. They can see an attorney. They get help with prescriptions as individuals are able. Without food, how do you expect anyone to help themselves out of the situation? Orlando Food Not Bombs is designed to take care of every, not just every need, is not designed to take care of every need, just the ones they are able, as we all should be doing what we are able. And this is a long story with a lot of, actually the story is relatively short, but the comments, there are 127 of them, for those of you who like to read through the commentary. Sometimes the commentary is more educational than the story in these newspapers. You've been a long-time San Franciscan. What's up with Food Not Bombs up in San Francisco these days? Have you been seeing them?
Well, I'm not officially a member. I don't represent Food Not Bombs. I've been involved with projects in coalition with them. They are very active in Berkeley also. They San Francisco and Berkeley, and they have wonderful vegetarian hot vegetarian dinner in at the People's Park in Berkeley every from 5 till 6 p.m. Sometimes they're there until 6:30 p.m. It's in Berkeley People's Park. By the way, I like to mention briefly I'm very happy that Food Not Bombs serves vegetarian food and healthy food and hot dinners. The vegetarian diet is far, far better than eating meat. The United Nations report published 3 months ago, the latest science reports that the world's population should voluntarily move away from eating, producing and eating meat and meat products. Milk and meat are, according to the latest science, the biggest cause of cancer in the country.
I know Keith McHenry has that
meat
approach
and milk
too. He believes in that. We should be calling in about 15 minutes. I notice also coming up this weekend at the East Bay, if you go to indiebay.org/East Bay on the internet, you'll find a Sit Lie protest coming up on Sunday, 12 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Apparently it's going to be a 12-hour protest at the downtown Berkeley BART. Bring your chair to the Chair-a-Pillar. No sit-lie ordinance in Berkeley. And then there's a big graphic. Can you believe this stupid law? And there are a couple of thinkers sitting on stone statues. I can't believe it. I'm headed for the Chair-a-Pillar, says the other thinker. Chair-a-Pillar against the proposal. And the only problem is we don't have a lot of details about the proposal, which is a proposed sit-lie ordinance similar to the one, I presume, passed in San Francisco by initiative because the Board of Supervisors turned it down last year. And the one passed by our city council here in Santa Cruz way back in 1994. I think we were the first city to, Berkeley passed it, and then the voters got enough to put it to make it an initiative requiring the Berkeley, if I have my chronology right, to put it on the ballot, and it narrowly passed in Berkeley in November, but we passed it, that is to say, the Kennedy Council passed it back in 1994, the Rotkin Kennedy Coonerty Council. All those three were on it, not our present mayor, Ryan Coonerty, but our old mayor, his father, Neil Coonerty, who is now on the Board of Supervisors here in Santa Cruz. And we had a law that was originally no sitting within 6 feet of a building, a statue, a crosswalk, a telephone, all these different objects. And that has been expanded to 14 feet. Forbidden zones throughout all business districts, commercial districts, beachfront districts, you name it. There are some, I don't think it's true in, it's not true in industrial zones, but it impacts the downtown significantly and results in tickets for hundreds of dollars for people who don't know what the fuck is going on or who are just trying to rest and trying to use the public spaces as the community should be allowed to do that. Is this a CIA plot? What's going on here, Paul? You give us the briefing.
Well, the research indicates that the intelligence establishment, particularly the CIA, has been recruiting drug people and people in prisons to do their dirty work at the number of prisons, and they to cop a plea with behind closed doors, cop a plea with the CIA. We'll give you they give them get them off the hook from their time in prison to do some type of special little project
now,
for the FBI and CIA.
Now, just a minute, the sitting ban, we're talking about the sitting ban protest coming up in Berkeley, our sitting law in Santa Cruz. Is Leon Panetta behind it, yes or no?
I got him here, folks.
We got him. We're stringing him up. Go ahead.
The sitting law, sit lie.
Here is the sitting law. Actually, we have two different laws here: a sitting law and a lying law.
Well,
you can lie about it, but then you
let
can,
me tell
well,
you
of
a bizarre experience I had in the past year and a half. I was doing leaflet tabling on Castro, anti-war, anti-fascist leaflets and booklets, and a number of booklets on AIDS, the leaflet tabling, and along with a number of very strange, suspicious, violent incidents happened against me and in and around my table area, leaflet tabling, at Harvey Milk Plaza, no less, at the corner of Castro and Market Street. And one example is it was May 17th of last year, I was leaflet tabling at Castro Market Street, and a rally had just taken place. It was a rally with Tom Mecca and several other activists against torture in Iraq and Afghanistan, and including against the torturing of gays and lesbians in Iran and Iraq. And so when that rally ended, I resumed my leaflet tabling there at the very corner, and some strange guy came by in his wheelchair, a white Caucasian guy, and he tried to start an argument with me by simply saying he very much disapproves of the literature that I have available on my literature table, and he started picking up the booklets, the books, and throwing them in my face. And so he spent about 10 or 15 minutes doing that, swirling around my table with his while he was sitting in his wheelchair. A white Caucasian guy, gray hair, with a cowboy hat on. And he, I had my camcorder with me on my cell phone. I should have taken a picture of him. So I called the police. The police came, and I made a police report while he was there. And while the police were finishing up taking the police report from me, along comes the head of Gay Shame. His name is Roland. The head of Gay Shame, a black guy who acts very robotic, very similar to Osama bin Obama.
Wait a minute.
Osama bin Obama.
He's a winning Democratic Party candidate. He has led us to victory.
Well, victory over the victory for the rich is $14 trillion after inflation.
Briefly summarize what relevance this latest lengthy anecdote has to the sit-lie demonstrations coming up on Sunday in Berkeley, and of course the Tuesday march for the Berkeley City Council.
Okay. Well, another leaflet tabling a day I was doing at Castro Market, and it was at a sit-lie demonstration. That was right there where I was doing leaflet tabling, and I was there to support their demonstration.
After the law was passed?
Before. This was before the law was passed. The law was passed in last November?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this was just in the June before that the law was passed. And at the...
It was actually passed in November.
Yeah. And so at this no-sit-law demonstration, my leaflet table, this drunken guy, he was falling down drunk. He was just completely doused on booze. He not only sat by my table, he was laying alongside and in front of my leaflet table for about almost 2 hours.
And did this provoke...
No.
You attempted to have him removed, or did you...
Well, I was hoping that I don't want to reflect bad on the demonstrators there, but including Tom Mecca, but none of them made any effort to discourage him from sitting and lying down on his back in front of my literature table for 2 hours.
You didn't roll him down the sidewalk yourself.
I didn't want to touch him because I just felt that he should just do his...
You are a supporter of the Sit Lie Law, because now under the new law in San Francisco, you can call the local police and get this scoff law rolled out back to the... Actually, if he is drunk and he can't take care of himself, that's another infraction.
But you see, nobody there cared about him. At the rally, they could care less. And it's unfortunate that here these people were having Tom Mecca's group.
They care about the principles, but not the people.
They it's like these nuns on Third Street. They feed the hungry, but they don't want them to urinate in any bathroom in their bathroom. It's a they don't.
Keep the bathrooms clean. You know,
and
the right kind of people.
So. For the rally was about 2 hours long, and during the 2 hours that this guy was laying flat on his back and sideways and every which way in front of and alongside my literature table, and I didn't want to disturb him and the demonstration.
This is a commentary on the hypocrisy.
Of
the sit-lie opponents, actually. No,
this particular group of I'll even name the name, Tom Mecca's group.
Aside from being a personal attack, which we never allow, this is also an obscure group that we don't know about.
San Francisco, they're not an obscure group.
They're pretty obscure. At least for me, they're pretty obscure. To our
San Francisco.
In our Santa Cruz, I don't think they're doing. But anyway, are you going to be in Berkeley, sitting down on the sidewalk in solidarity with the people?
Yes.
I think you oppose the sit-in.
Yes.
In spite of this drunk.
He was just one drunk and one, one time.
The law would have facilitated your removing him.
I just let him be there because I felt that eventually he would.
What are you doing this weekend to help, should we say, either support the movement against the Sit Lie Law, which is, I guess, going to be important in Berkeley because I think it's going to the Berkeley City Council, or at least the protesters are, on Tuesday evening. After the Sunday protest this weekend.
I'm
by the way, if anybody's interested in doing this, give me a call.
If you're going up there, I might be able to go up there. Berkeley is a hotbed of the homeless movement. Food Not Bombs there is right there in the.
Maybe Food Not Bombs is chief fund maker, jammer Keith McHenry. Let's see if it is. Hi, you're on free radio.
You're on free radio with Paul, and you probably are calling because my mic is down, right?
Yes.
Beat you to the punch, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for calling, though, because I turned it up, and you have nothing more to criticize. Do you have any other comments, though?
No, maybe later.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there's a listener who's on her toes. I want to thank you. Uh-huh. If I am getting old and feeble, so please do call in if such things as, mics off, bizarre music in the background, unintelligible gabble, or just plain boring stuff. Call in and let us know that you're sick of it, you've had enough, you're mad as hell, and you're not going to take any more, as one TV actor, or actually as a movie actor once put it. I'm going to turn now to get back to Orlando Food Not Bombs because Keith is due to call in, although he's got about like a 50% track record on that one. Sometimes he does. And
he's very busy.
He is a busy boy. Uh-huh. There's no question about it.
He was interviewed by Pat Carey, who I mentioned earlier. Pat Carey, she's living in San Francisco in retirement. She's about 92 years old. She interviewed 20 years ago. She did about a one-hour taped interview of Keith McHenry in her apartment.
Indeed. And I've done numerous interviews with Keith McHenry. What does that have to do with the price of corn?
Well, it was Pat Carey's first real experience at doing a solo interview, just her there, no one else to tell her how to do this and do that, technical assistant.
She did a good interview.
Yeah, she did. It was a very good interview, and she about his life story and his life's work.
He's actually writing a book about it, I believe, which is supposed to come out fairly soon.
Oh.
That's what he was saying on his last interview, and he, of course, has written the famous Food Now Bombs manual, which tells people how to how his experience in starting organizations locally that provide vegan food, consensus process, dealing with local police and so forth. It's going to be interesting to talk to Keith about this issue of the "we gave you a permit, what are you complaining about" approach that the Orlando police are using to deal with the Orlando Food Now Bombs. To give people, again, a kind of a brief summary of what this is all about, the Orlando authorities, in order to deter homeless people from gathering weekly or biweekly or daily, I mean, however frequently Orlando Food Now Bombs was feeding in the parks, passed a law that stated you can only feed, you'll only be given permits for feeding in twice a year in any particular park. And since there are 54 parks in Orlando, that means that more than half the year you will not be able to feed at all, and you'll have to run around to different parks and not provide a central feeding point for people who want to come for a regular meal. And it's also, of course, an attack. It's an attack on the freedom of speech issue, because Food Now Bombs not only feeds people, it gives out political literature. It has a banner that says Food Now Bombs and so forth.
And at Food Now Bombs, in that there's important and fundamental social services work, is a an entrance point and a welcomed and constructive gateway for people on the streets into political activity, into encouraging the and promoting the values that go with the activism, the values that Pat Carey and Food Now Bombs represent, the values, the human, universal human values of that human beings, every human being is worth as much as every other human being, whatever race, creed, sexual orientation.
Except for Osama bin Laden, of course.
Except for Osama bin Obama.
Oh, that's another guy. Osama. And then, like, all of those Obamas, Osamas, all those killers, they bother me. You know, I got to tell you, I don't. Assassins all, I don't go for that. You know, it's not my cup of tea.
We've heard of Osama Bush Laden, but the poster, Osama Bush Laden, remember that?
Now
there's a well-known poster when, 10 years ago, Osama Bush Laden. Half of the photo vertical was a photograph of Bush Jr., and the other half was a photo poster.
Well, there are some who accuse me of being the crypto bin Laden of Santa Cruz, so I immediately started El Qaeda in Santa Cruz, but unfortunately, since I never read the Quran, it didn't really go very far. It's a losing situation there. And actually, the Quran is not really linked that closely with it, though frankly, I think all such holy books are complete horseshit, and that, of course, shows my bias. And I'm sure there's actually a lot of wisdom in those ancient works, as there is in some other ancient works. But let's leave that aside for the Sunday show. Deal with religion and give it the execution it so justly deserves. Now, the issue again that's going to be coming up if and when our friend Keith calls in is going to be, there was this permit process in Orlando that was set up by city law. It was appealed and found unconstitutional at the lower court level. It was found unconstitutional at the circuit court level, at the Federal Court of Appeals level. But they convened a special panel, an 11-member panel, of, I think it's either the third or fourth or tenth, I don't know, whatever court it is on the East Coast that does such things. And just like they were able, they actually supported my right in Santa Cruz to get a trial against three mayors who were shutting me out of a city council meeting and having me arrested for no good reason. Unfortunately, on the East Coast, an opposite kind of ruling was given, stating that the city's laws were constitutional, that they could limit Food Now Bombs to very limited, essentially two feedings per year in any one particular park in Orlando, which sounds suspiciously to me like a violation of freedom of assembly if you're a constitutional buff, First Amendment and all that. but more than that, an attack on a class war attack on those attempting to enable and to organize and to give some power and sustenance to poor people who are actually not just looking for charity, but looking for answers and looking for ways to effectuate those answers. So if and when Keith calls in, we'll be talking to him because his response and the response of Orlando Food Not Bombs was to feed anyway, as we did in San Francisco day after day, week after week, year after year, even though over 1,000 people were arrested in San Francisco for feeding and one of them convicted and serving time in a jail after a jury trial. And you're looking at that supreme martyr even as we speak today. Don't you feel gratified to be in the studio with such a hero? I mean, it does my heart good to even think of that. Actually, what I'm saying is that you know, the only person stupid enough to go to jury trial was me, and I went to a jury trial and was convicted of violating an injunction that prohibited Food Not Bombs from serving. But Food Not Bombs kept serving in spite of the injunction, and they stopped arresting people. I served a month in jail. Is that going to happen in Orlando, Florida, is the question. And we'll see what happens. Apparently, their latest strategy is to grant a permit while the media is looking, and then later on, when the media have all gone home, arrest people and try to shut down the operation out of the glare, the pitiless glare of publicity, as some have termed it. Your view, Paul?
Well, around these issues and the mass arrests, even if it's two or three people getting arrested and spending time in jail and the unjust persecution of the advocates and activists, throughout all this legal process, I'm looking in the general overview because I can see in the big picture the whole process of activism and I've been arrested at anti-war demonstrations
recently.
Well, it was the overview about the homeless issue and I was arrested by the police, the sheriffs in San Francisco, when Mayor Jordan was mayor at the time.
That's 20 years ago.
Yeah, right. Mayor Jordan was mayor, and when he declared martial law, a state of a citywide emergency, the first time that citywide emergency had ever been declared in San Francisco since the 2006 earthquake.
That was the Rodney King protest.
Yes, there was.
I was up there actually. I remember those days. Yes,
and I was arrested. But the what happened?
They had police lining the streets. It was walls of blue. You should have seen it, folks.
Mission Street, and I was. About over 400 were arrested when we eventually filed a class action lawsuit and we won out of court. The mayor of San Francisco, we filed lawsuits. So we got attorneys, high-powered civil rights attorneys through the ACLU and the
National Lawyers Guild.
I think it was. And we had to file a class action lawsuit against the mayor, Mayor Jordan, the police chief.
Did that stop them? No.
They continued on, but we won the class action lawsuit, and each of the defendants got approximately a $2,000 check.
I believe Linda Edwards was an activist in Santa Cruz. Linda the Lark, as we used to call her, died in 95 of liver cancer, was involved in that protest, and I believe she may have gotten a settlement. She and I were arrested up there, I believe. Don't remember exactly. It was quite an occasion, quite an affair, really. Sort of like, you know, if you want to see what Tunisia, Egypt, you know, Bahrain, Libya look like,
yes,
in the squares, you would go to San Francisco in your time machine in 1992.
And it had centrally racial overtones. Involving the people there in defiance of martial law declared by the mayor of San Francisco, citywide martial law, and that Rodney King was regarding the solidarity with Rodney King for being beaten because he was beaten up by the police.
Was this after the Simi Valley verdicts, or was this after the beating?
This was after the verdict. This was after
Simi Valley verdicts.
Simi Valley
when a Simi Valley jury found Rodney King, or found the cops who beat Rodney King not guilty. There was rioting in a number of cities.
Uh-huh.
In those days, people really gave a shit about this kind of stuff, and they were more concerned with that than, should we say, doing Facebook on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Or
twittering around.
And revisiting this issue is really very, very important because it, the issues overlap. Homeless issues, race, certainly racial or racist, racist issues, and the police brutality against innocent people and police brutality against blacks. Persecution of a...
Not in Santa Cruz, though. We're in Santa Cruz, and that's 92. That's 20 years ago. Coming to the present, old-timer. Come on, man. Those are... Yes, you know, that's from yesterday. Things are different now.
No, they're not. What's past is prologue, and they lash out. They... what's happened in Oakland with Oscar, the guy...
Oscar Grant III.
Oscar Grant. That was...
Johannes Merzl. He was coming out of jail in early June, I believe.
Well,
he's the guy who shot him, executed him at the, on the BART station in Fruitvale. Uh-huh. Let me jump ahead to this other story about from Orlando. This is also from yesterday's Orlando Sentinel. It's by Mark Pinsky, and it says clergy would take crime out of feeding homeless. The group opposed to Orlando's new laws asks to speak with Mayor Buddy Dyer. That's apparently the mayor of Orlando. A group of Central Florida religious leaders wants the city to stop arresting those who feed the homeless in Lake Eola Park and other public places and wants to meet with Orlando's mayor to discuss the issue. I've been trying to meet with Santa Cruz's mayor for half a year, and I just can't get past that front door with old Ryan Coonerty. But, maybe these church folks will be more successful. If the goal of Concerned Clergy for Compassion is to stop the criminalization of taking care of the homeless, said the Reverend Matt Blowers of the Harbor Church, which is affiliated with the Free Methodist Church and Brethren in Christ denominations. Notice, my theme on this show is to stop the criminalization of the homeless, but apparently that extends. If you try to help the homeless, they get criminalized too, so they say people who try to feed people food in Orlando, Florida. They say they were moved to action. Let's see. The coalition is made up of clergy and lay members representing about 20 Protestant, Jewish, and Muslim congregations, plus the Catholic Diocese of Orlando. You see, now, in Santa Cruz, you can't get these church organizations together, or haven't yet, to oppose such obvious violations of the Constitution as the Santa Cruz City's sleeping ban, or the prosecution of the Peace Camp 2010 for peacefully protesting and actually doing what both the churches and the Homeless Services Center could not and would not do, which is set up a safe zone for homeless people to sleep last summer. Yet, many people were arrested for this, or at least cited under misdemeanor charges with penalties of it's either 6 months or a year in jail, $1,000 fine maximum, and four people have been convicted of that in court. Do we hear anything from our churches? No, they're still wondering about whether they will allow three vehicles in a church parking lot at night, which is one of the exceptions to the homeless shall not sleep law, that is the law in Santa Cruz. So it's interesting how far behind established organizations are from the real principles they're supposed to be incarnating. The churches say they were moved to action by the arrest under a city ordinance passed last summer of an activist for exceeding the limit on the number of homeless people who can be fed at one time. City officials have told the group that it first met with Elena Brenner, the city clerk, and Marcia Siegel George, the city's deputy chief executive officer, before any meeting with the mayor can be considered. It was unclear Thursday whether the coalition would accept that offer. The desire of the group is that we actually meet with the mayor so he would know where we're coming from right from the beginning, said the Reverend Jim Coffin, senior pastor of Markham Woods Seventh-day Adventist Church. Heather Albach, spokeswoman for the mayor, acknowledged that the homeless issue is important, but added it's really a broader issue than the ordinance, one that involves Orange County and other governmental agencies. That's Orange County, Florida, by the way, folks. In order to solve the problem of homelessness, we have to work together as a community and pool our resources, she said. This is one of the Flax and Hacks who is working in the administration that has criminalized people who feed homeless people in Orlando parks if they do so more than twice a year in any particular park. However, Blowers, who joined the coalition as representative of 14 evangelical churches in the Waterford Lakes area, said, "The mayor has backed this ordinance, so we want to talk to him directly. We're not going away. The city ordinance requires a specific permit for the public feeding of 25 or more people, including distributors and servers in a park or public area within a two-mile radius of City Hall." They don't want those homeless people near City Hall. We have a caller. I bet that's someone I know. I hope it is. Hi, you are on Free Radio with Uncle Robert here.
Hi, this is Keith McHenry in Orlando, Florida, calling in from the one of America's most anti-homeless cities.
Wait a minute. Are you with the conspiracy to commit lunch?
We are with that very same conspiracy that people have read of.
Well, I've just been reading a story from yesterday's Orlando Sentinel by Mark I. Pinsky. Clergy would take the crime out of feeding the homeless. A bunch of church groups apparently tend to be kind of backing up your criminal conspiracy to feed the poor. Is that, have you, should we say, garnered their support?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. The whole thing is very amazing. You know, there's a number of the more mainstream kind of poverty-type, you know, churches that have been kind of going with the city. But the other ones, the grassroots community, has been totally supportive. And so this afternoon we were at the park at the Thursday meal. It's a, I think it's a, I don't know what religious, other than Christian type relationship they have. I don't know if it's a congregation or anything, but they have been sharing food and they are trying to get around this ordinance. And if the word spread that people are being shut down, and so basically the issue is this: is the city of Orlando made a law that you had to get a permit, and you are only allowed to share food twice a year per park, and so then some of the churches have been trying to get around it by having every one of their members in their church apply for a permit, but not associate themselves with the church, so that they can get like 26, 28 people to each sign up for a couple, two nights, two Thursdays. They can fill the year with Thursday nights. So that's one of the strategies that have been happening. Now, the Food Not Bombs, we decided to make a different decision, which is that we would defy the process altogether and say that it was, we did not agree with the courts and with the city, and that we were just not going to request permits, and that we were going to just continue to share food regardless of what the state said.
Now, according to the Orlando Sentinel, a city official presented Food Not Bombs with a permit in order to short-circuit your scofflaw approach.
Yeah, it was a very funny thing. They ran up, a woman ran up behind the table and tossed the permit on the table and ran away. I wadded up the permit that they gave us and then ended up just throwing it, giving it to Mark, one of our volunteers, to give back to the city, which they did. And so that's how we handled that situation. And we think that they may just play a game where they hand out permits to say that we're being permitted so they don't have to arrest us, fearing that arresting us would
generate publicity.
Well, then you and make it obvious how demented they are.
Well, Keith, you need to sue the city to make sure that they follow their own law and only give you two permits per park per year.
This is a big problem for them, actually. Yeah,
so the minute they give you that,
they're almost in a bind where it's not clear how they're going to play this out. Now, one idea is that that we have heard is that they're just doing this game right now, hoping that the media spotlight will be off of the issue, and then as soon as that's the case, they'll start to arrest the Food Not Bombs kids.
Right. Well, as I said, I think a preemptive action, an immediate lawsuit against the city, the minute they give you a third permit denouncing them for being scofflaws, is appropriate.
Yeah, that's what they should do. But it's a very fascinating thing. Now, I'm a little concerned that my battery may be running out on this call. So if it does, I'm going to plug in somewhere and call you back. So don't be worried.
We won't panic. Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, now, the other thing that we've noticed is that other cities in the state have announced that because of what has gone on in Orlando, they're creating the same laws, believing that now they'll be supported by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, since the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that our right to free speech was protected since we were offered permits to share twice a year in each of the parks.
Well, what's the complaint? I mean, you know, twice a year is an opportunity to speak to people, and it probably would provide a nice focus. The rest of the time, well, you could, you know, hum. Hello? I think we lost
him.
He's still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. It's making a weird sound, but anyway, who knows what
that's
about. By the
way, we have in the studio...
It's weird because we're going to continue... I mean, part of our issue is that we need to stand strong against what's going on with this law because it's part of an ever-growing anti-homeless, anti-poor, pro-business... tactics that are happening across America.
We have, by the way, Keith, in the studio, we have Paul Bernardino, as you know, because you spoke to him about an hour ago. He's got a question, perhaps a comment or two.
Well,
Okay.
Hi, Keith, again, and thank you so much for all your wonderful activism and putting yourself and raising the principles out on the line and up front and for all these years now. And you've known Pat Carey. She's in retirement now in San Francisco, about 92 years old, in a rest home. I remember she did an interview of you about your life story and your activism history, and that was one of her very early experiences when she did a solo interview without anyone else around. And she very much identified with your work and the principles that you and Food Not Bombs and Homes Not Jails have been standing up for all these years. Do you recall Pat Carey and her work with Food Not Bombs?
Oh, yes, I do. And I remember she did some drawings.
It looks like you're fading out, Keith. Yeah, he did. He's got to recharge his battery, so
okay.
he'll be doing that, and he'll be calling back. For those who want to call in, don't call in on the 427-3772 line, now that I've told you the number. Call in on the other line, which, get a pencil now, run to your stationary sets and grab a pencil or possibly, I don't know, dial it up on your cell phones or whatever you got, your iPods perhaps. It's 831-469-3119. 469-3119 is the number you should call in if you've got any comments on anything you've heard so far. Announcements you might want to make about what's happening in Santa Cruz or what's happened in the last week that we should know about. I'm going to be playing a little something from... I guess it's a documentary on Pat Carey, you were telling me.
It's a documentary, this particular one. It's a TV, it'll be the soundtrack from a TV program, a one-hour program, one of the TV programs that I edited and produced and cable cast. And Pat Carey is included in this one-hour program. But the section, a clip.
Better be a short section.
Yeah, it'll be
It'll
be like a minute and a half soundtrack clip of her talking about how she was helping homeless people with AIDS.
That's shorter than even the Coonerty two-minute limit. All right, let's see. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. This must be Drum Circle Dave.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey there, Dave.
Wanted to say we had one drive-by, no shooting yesterday at the drum jam on the levee in downtown Santa Cruz behind Trader Joe's. Or no, behind the India Joe's.
Now I want to know, Dave, has there been, in the last couple of, last month, have there been any tickets, and how late has the drum circle gone, the Wednesday drum circle that was driven out of the downtown area about a year ago?
Oh, man, I mean, you know, hey, you know, I mean, they're down there, man. They got their suits on, man. They're lying, man, to us, man. I mean, they're all, you know, they have understanding eyes, and then suddenly they don't understand, and then they bring out their shields and their bustlers and all their stuff, and they come down there, and they look at some drummers, and they say, no, we don't do drumming here. We sell drums. We don't play them here.
Actually, they sell coffee at the site where the drum circle used to
be.
They
sell coffee now, yes.
Yep.
Mantri
Srinath, he's selling coffee there. Actually, I saw him a week ago Wednesday. He waved at me, and I waved at him.
What was his name?
Lulu Carpenter's owner, Mantri Srinath. He's the guy who has had me.
Talking
he banned me from his store 8 years ago, actually.
Officer Krupke.
But let's get back to the current, should we say, impoverished but still existent location for the drum circle. You say there have been no bus or arrests for the last week, the last month? Or?
Yeah, they're pretty cool on us now, man. They know, man. We're just
I got you.
We're just out there trying to, you know, make the peace.
Where's
you
the
know,
drum circle?
Across from the bus station.
The drum circle. Actually, in the studio, I have a guest with me, Dave.
You do? Well, hell, I guess. Hey, watch out. There's spiders in the corners down there, and look out for those felt pads.
Hey, thank you there, Dave. The drum circle is on the levee, the Santa Cruz levee, between the Soquel Bridge and the Broadway Bridge, behind the restaurant India Joe's, and it's kind of parallel with the Metro bus station, if you know that. If you go over to the levee, you'll find the folks on there doing every Wednesday between 3 and sometimes into the evening. Yeah, they do a drum circle there. I've got some interviews from the street I'm going to play now. Although, first, before we go any further, we'll play, Pat Carey's, the tribute you have for her in this documentary that you just described.
Okay, before you push the button, let me do a brief intro. It's Pat Carey discussing her visiting a homeless gay man who had advanced case of AIDS. And when she and I went to visit him, Keith Winters, when she and I went to visit him in the Laguna Honda Hospital at the height of the AIDS epidemic. And it's Brett McCabe talking with Pat Carey in front of our TV cameras in Oakland. The name of the program that they were on at that time was Network Against War and Fascism, that I was involved with editing, producing, and filming. And it was twice a month. And it's Pat Carey discussing her visiting a gay man who had an advanced case of AIDS.
What year was this, Paul?
1989.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear it.
1989.
We may have gone beyond it here. Let's see where we're at with this.
You did what? You did that? And she said, well, I had to do something. So
Diane, you were mentioning with the Nuremberg Committee, I guess your tenants are the...
It sounds like we missed it.
I had it queued in just before I came out over here.
I think we're going to have to, maybe on Sunday we'll try a reprise.
Yes, I knew I had a cue in.
But, for those who are interested, if you want to find out more about the life, Pat Carey is on the Internet, I take it, some discussion.
No, she's in retirement, and it's just...
Well, no, I mean some discussion of her, maybe.
No, they. I'm going to be emailing a tribute to Pat Carey to email contacts that I have.
Carey?
Her last name is Carey, Carey. And if you want to send her a get well letter and letter of solidarity, you can send it to her. Am I on the air?
You are on the air. Yes.
You can send any letter of solidarity to Pat Carey to P.O. Box 475333, San Francisco, California 94147-5333.
Forget it. You won't be able to remember that one. But if you want to remember it, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll give it to you. You can pass it on to me. There is an article online about Pat Carey, and the way to get it is just, go to Google for Pat Carey or Bing for Pat Carey. The Bay City Observer
has an article by Virginia McAuliffe on Pat Carey.
Oh, yes.
Discussing her, and I don't know how accurate it is or how extensive, but it does have some of her art, which was donated to the Mae Brussel collection, according to this. So this might be something. It was actually, this story was written in 2000.
Give the web address.
Well,
web
I would, address. But it's too long, and no one's going to remember it. But if you if you Bing for Pat, P-A-T, Carey, C-A-R-E-Y, and San Francisco, you'll come up with this.
And that website is Virginia McAuliffe. She's the archivist of the Mae Brussel Archives in Sonoma, California, which is just east of Santa Cruz.
Good enough. Now I'm going to turn to some local yokels who don't know anything about the Jim Jones killing or the murder of Moscone or MKUltra or the Twin Towers. They know nothing about these sinister and dark conspiracies, but they do know about what the fuck is going on in Santa Cruz, or they'd like to know what the fuck is going on in Santa Cruz. Let's hear a little of this, and you may feel free to comment at any point. We can stop the tape, and you can make some pungent comments. Perhaps getting the CIA perspective, because we know that secretly, you yourself... Well, we won't get into that at this time.
And I'd like to visit the drum circle. It sounds really quaint. I'll just take one of my noon lunches out on Wednesday.
Let the agency know you're going there.
What time is the drum circle?
They're 3 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock.
I'm going to go out there next Wednesday.
Yeah, they should be. Of course, by that time, we'll have cleared up that whole problem. Here we go.
The Rene Curry donut and water line. We have a long line of folks here. It's about 2 o'clock.
And Paul has just asked me, what are we doing here? This is actually me on Sunday, last Sunday, at the... there's a food line... for a rather pathetically small amount of food that's given out every week by Rene Curry and her schnookums, who also play chess with you, give you bottles of water. They have sometimes they have scarves and caps in front of the former Borders bookshop building, which is, of course, now empty. And you're going to hear me talking to a number of police officers who decided that homeless people had best not sit down within 14 feet of that building.
2:15, hanging out, looking for, waiting for food, 10, 20, 30, 40. I'd say 50 or 60 folks in line today, looking homeless. It's only the middle of the month, they're looking hungry. So I don't know if we have any. Looks like pastries, but no burritos at the moment. We'll get back to the gang in a moment, and we'll see what's. We'll be back to get more details. And between the, I'm actually playing chess between the table, which has the scarves and caps and razors, a small number of them actually, which are being quickly snatched up, and the donuts and water.
What am I going to do?
We'll see.
No, that's not it either.
I recognize a few faces in line, but there are a lot of people who are new to me. So we'll see what's going. Tell me more about. So we're talking with
Joe.
And Joe, we're here in, you just got out of line. You have your donut and water, or your water anyway. And it looks like the food is more limited. But you say you saw a slut parade earlier?
Yes, I heard you on the radio earlier. And then, Saturday, there was the Rejuvenation Fest, and there was a bunch of girls that were scantily dressed. And one of the police officers was noted as saying if they're dressed like sluts, then they could be raped.
Yes.
And so the crowd went into an uproar. The Santa Cruz City Police should be sued.
I think it was a Toronto cop who actually said that.
Okay.
At least that was online.
Well, it's spread throughout the country now. This is now a international issue, and we should take it to the Supreme Court, and all the girls should go along with no clothes on and with total safety.
And how many people were in this rally?
I would say there was probably about 100, and maybe 50 of them were scantily clad.
And this actually was an event that happened in San Francisco, in Santa Cruz on Sunday. While I was doing my radio show, so I was unable to attend this event, although actually I think it happened from 12 to 3. It was originally slated for Saturday. It was advertised on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. And again, it was a protest against what a Toronto, Canada cop said, that, if she dresses like a slut, she shouldn't be surprised if she gets assaulted or raped, something like that. And that was said some time ago. I think it was said months ago. And so a number of women decided to appropriate the name slut to say, right, we should be able to dress however the hell we want and not expect to be assaulted or improperly importuned for sexual activity unless we're interested or unless, you know, and there should be consensual activity, not abuse. And the whole march, which was supposed to happen on Saturday, I went down to the town clock on Saturday hoping to slut it up. But no, there was nobody there. And so on Sunday, I missed my opportunity to slut it up. However, if you want to see this, and it's a great, the whole series of photographs are online on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, on Santa Cruz Indie Media. And Bradley, as usual, did a great job not only showing male and female sluts, i.e. human beings with great signs. In fact, I'm going to read some of those signs now because I was most impressed with their content. They're very witty. Say that again? I wish we, yeah, these are of course, you know, they aren't really, I wasn't there for the rally, so I didn't get the specifics. But I did, you know, this is a great video display, and here it is. It's and under the heading on demonstration in Santa Cruz against sexual assault for victims' rights. On May 15th, Santa Cruz Slut Walk took to the sidewalks to make a unified statement about sexual assault and victims' rights to demand respect for all and reappropriate the term slut. The demonstration was one of many around the world sparked by a statement on January 24th. So it wasn't the Santa Cruz Police Department that did it. It was the Toronto, Canada Police Department. I have a lot of criticisms of the Santa Cruz Police Department, but I don't want to improperly ascribe the wrong things to them. The officer shared insight into the police force's view of sexual assault by stating women should avoid dressing like sluts in order not to be victimized. Santa Cruz Slut Walk began in San Lorenzo Park at noon on a rainy Sunday. The weather was not ideal for a slut walk, but the sun eventually turned out and layers of clothing were shed. The demonstration traveled from San Lorenzo Park down Pacific Avenue along Mission to Walnut and ended up with a rally at the clock tower. I'm going to play for Paul some of these photos. It's called Slut Pride Worldwide, Santa Cruz Slut Walk. And there's some great photos. This was a week, 4 days ago.
Oh, my God.
We got some great signs. Rape is a crime of power, not a crime of passion. It was great. If I had known they were actually going to do it, because nobody was there the day before,
I know a guy. There's a guy in San Francisco, believe it or not, who denies the existence of rape. Have you ever met someone, male or female, who believes that rape is a social construct?
We'll leave these aside for another time, perhaps, unless you want to go into it. Here's a sign. Yeah. A dress is not a yes, being held by a sluttily dressed woman. And here's one. Eve was framed. Two women are walking. They don't look too slutty, but they're young and attractive. Here's one. Fuck your cat calls by a woman with a T-shirt that says slut. And then another woman is a smiling woman has cunts are beautiful. Then here's one, sluts are not dangerous, sex offenders are dangerous, says one hoodie woman, a woman in a blue hoodie. Here's a guy with a slight end of the sign, end rape culture. And here's one, judge the rapist, not the victim. One woman holds up a sign. And here's a guy, a Latino guy with a headband saying, he, she, Z wasn't asking for it. Consent is the presence of a yes, not the absence of a no, says a sign of one woman with a rather fetching
black
hat.
These are very articulate placards.
Isn't it great?
Very well thought.
And here's a woman with a low-cut dress. Legalize. I'm not quite sure what she wants to legalize, but the woman to her right is a sign. I don't know. I put the sensual in consensual. Very nice. And she's quite sensual. She can call me up any time, and we'll talk about consensual activity if she wishes. Then here's one that says, just because I'm sexy doesn't mean you can have sex with me. She's obviously asking for it, right? Moving along, here's another one. Support women's tights. And there's a picture of a woman in tights. Wearing a miniskirt is not signing a consent form.
She's a middle-aged woman.
And these are middle-aged. I don't know, middle-aged. They got a lot of blonde hair. Look pretty young to me. There's a middle-aged woman over here. That looks like possibly two women embracing, could be lesbians. Stop shaming. Stop blaming. Another sign, no faux show. Not sure what that means. Then there's power to the sluts. And we have another, a guy holding a sign, yes means yes. Cunts are beautiful, slut pride, and...
Is that in response to the head of the IMF allegedly raping?
No,
him?
That was,
this was a few days ago.
That came out later. This was on Sunday. So I think it was before that. This was in response to the comment of, you know, that they, if you dress like a slut, you're likely to be victimized. My outfit makes the statement, makes a statement, not an open invitation. And we have a caller. Let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I'm listening to this slutty conversation.
Yes.
With Robert North.
Yes.
And I think you're just drifting into a little bit too much salacious joy while you're describing this. Like, which side are you on?
Well, now hold, just because I have my own sexual response to
that. Slut walking. With us. Don't be picking us like grapes or cherries.
Are you speaking
like
as
that.
A slut part or a part. Slut supporter?
I'm a supporter of many causes, but indulge joy of allowing myself to be slutty.
Now, I've got to point out to you that I have not in any way suggested I have any, well, I may have made the occasional comment about the my own sexual or potential sexual response. I mean, how can you know
until
you meet the people involved, unless, of course, you're into mere pornography, which none of us here are, of course.
I think you should walk down Pacific Avenue in a bikini, and then we'll finish this conversation.
You want me to go in a bikini?
And walk down Pacific Avenue. Yeah.
Itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow.
Shorts are not enough.
Sure.
Yeah.
That might cause some people to, shall we say, criticize me as seeking publicity.
Yeah, you might even have to dig out a new law to find against you.
So you didn't get
we'll have to call Mickey Kraft if that happens.
I take it you didn't get to the slut walk last Sunday.
No, I didn't, but the Sentinel ran a picture, to my surprise.
Oh, really? Well, I encourage people to go check out this Bradley story on IndieBay. It's got some great stuff. And while I do have no shame for my slutty comments, nonetheless, my main point is the signs that are being carried. I think they're great.
I like it. Remember the Scott Street Geek? I love it when people, through natural earth, take a word and turn it around on its head.
So you'd have to clarify what you mean, because no one in the world except you and me and two other people know what you mean by the Scott's Creek Geeks.
Well, think about the Gypsy Geeks then. Lots of people know about that. The point is, this word was used as a pejorative, like nigger. And then when the people embraced it and wove it into the culture, the people who are the objects of this mean this word, it changed the meaning and it changed everything. It took the stingers out, I guess. Anyway,
well,
that's what's going on with slut. Like when Hooters came out. You know, women wouldn't say Hooters one time. Now they can say it almost as freely as men do.
Yeah, now they can sell themselves in Hooters establishments if they wish. I think that's a great step forward. I'm being sarcastic, actually. The word nigger has been appropriated by black men talking about themselves in comradely fashion in some circumstances. We got the continued criminalization of black people. In a great commentary that actually was.
I'm not talking about bigotry. We have this horrid racism that.
Yeah, I just wanted to say though that the commentary I'm referring to, which I encourage people to listen to, is on Making Contact. For those of you who have computers, go to the last Making Contact show. There's a great discussion of the issue of how the essentially slavery laws and the black codes after slavery used to oppress blacks for the next 100 years
were reinstituted essentially through felonies. That is to say, probation, felonies, loss of voting rights, loss of educational funding rights, all kinds of other rights have come into play that are similar to the black codes. Instead of, now it's been put under the rubric of the felony. A felon is now, and since blacks are disproportionately represented in jails, and was it one out of three blacks is likely to spend time in jail under the current drug war regime and racist regime, we have a bad situation. Just thought I would throw that one in, but let me finish up the slut talk, and is there anything else you want to add there, caller, or unless you want to identify yourself and expose yourself,
you can
self,
identify
so to speak.
Me. I'll deny it later if it's too goofy.
Okay. Bye-bye. There's a lot of good stuff that came out in the slut walk, and the signs were really superb. Society teaches us don't get raped instead of don't rape, which is, these are obvious but really kind of well put together. We love consensual sex. That's a slut talking. Rapists rape, sluts ask for consent. And if stud is good, why not slut? Down with double standards to buff-looking guys. Hold-up signs saying that at the town clock. Name some sex-positive words for women. I dare you, as one guy with a sign. Meaning, you know, it's hard to find a word that actually talks about a woman sexually that's a sex-positive word, I guess, and it doesn't involve some kind of power differential. Rape is not okay, justifiable, a joke, the victim's fault, a synonym for winning, I think it says. Anyway, a lot of pictures online at Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Bay, Slut Pride Worldwide, Santa Cruz Slut Walk. If you Google for that, I'm sure you'll get to the story, Slut Pride Worldwide. So, you are tuned to Free Radio. We are the slut station. I'm a slut myself in one sense or another. And I don't know, Paul, are you a slut or are you or not?
Well, I... basically, at the end of the day, beginning of the day, I'm a political activist. And
you're not a political slut.
No, I would say that Obama is, in the worst sense of the word, Obama, whoever sits in the White House, is definitely a slut.
He's asking to be raped.
Well, they're doing the raping.
Yes, he's a rapist rather than a rapee.
Yes.
We are the rapees. He is the rapist. It's a sad situation, folks.
Yes.
And actually, I just sort of, you know, doubled back on the sluts don't want to be raped. Sluts want to be allowed to dress as they would please and as hopefully would please others that they want to please.
I'm pleasantly amazed that they have the slut march in
Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz slut march.
Santa Cruz slut walk.
In Santa Cruz, is it helps to break the ice and open up the general idea of sexual aggression against any male or female by a male or female, and. It's a taboo for many people. It's a taboo subject that should be brought out. And these placards that you've been pointing out help to break the ice because sexuality is so much a part of everyday.
And break the silence.
Break the ice. And there's a lot of people that they keep this bottle up inside them, homeless people included, and they hungry people. And I was going to mention about the. As the economy goes down, and all indications are that the national economy here in this country is definitely going down, and the ecosystem is being destroyed, and there's going to be more hungry, more homeless, and the rise of the world's population.
And less fashionable sluts, I might add, unfortunately. I'm going to move on. I'm going to cut you off, Paul, because I want to get through the rest of this tape, which we don't have a lot of time for. Mm-hmm. Here's some more interviews from the street. Again, from We're Talking Sunday, the guy I remind you, and this is what got us off on it, was describing the earlier slut walk that came by, what he saw on Pacific Avenue.
women.
Are there any scantily clad men?
Yeah, there were some men slut supporters. I was one of them.
You're not scantily clad.
No, no, but I am a slut. Officially.
You are. I can see that right now.
You can see it in my eyes if you can't see it in my dress.
That old fashion looks good.
So I support the worldwide international slut movement.
Slut on. We've been talking with
Joe Slut.
Thank you, Joe Slut. Now we're talking with that slut about sluts.
Yes, I am Paul. I am a slut, and I was just at the slut walk, walking around being myself as a slut.
This was the walk that was essentially saying don't assault women because they're scantily dressed, right?
Yes, it's about not... It's about changing the perception of women who like to dress in attractive ways to prevent predators from following them just because of how they dress. It's not a signal or an invitation that they want anybody to come up and have sex with them, whether they want it or not. It's just an expression of who they are.
Now, there were about 100 people on this rally, I hear. Is that true?
I would estimate just about. We went around the clock tower at the end and circled around, and yes, we were filling up a whole block of street with
did
people.
Did you actually take to the streets, or did you stay on the sidewalk like good boys and girls?
Yeah, we were on the sidewalk.
Oh, you chickens.
we have to preserve our bodies from getting hit by cars if we're going to be sluts.
You want to stop the cars from hitting you by putting your human presence forward.
Right.
Well, slut on, that's what I say.
Yes, in slut I shall go, and I shall continue being a slutty, whether cops roll up or not. And, yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Officer Forbes has arrived. Let me get this first. It's a police encounter. I'll be right with you.
Oh. Did I ask you if you're aware of it?
No.
No? Well, you sure got up pretty quick.
I wanted to get with my stuff.
Officer Forbes came up to me, and Paul... I was talking to, and Paul was sitting down, and he was sitting down next to this vacant building, which is illegal in Santa Cruz. Although there was a long line of people eating food, others were sitting down within 14 feet of the building, also illegally, but no one was really blocking the sidewalk. There was the sidewalks of Santa Cruz, that particular place, are like 20, 25 feet wide. And these two officers stopped, got double parked their squad car, essentially blocking one lane of traffic on Pacific Avenue, and got out to come over and confront Paul and the woman with him. And this is the conversation that followed.
Okay. Well, you can't do it in 14 feet of the building.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a very important law in Santa Cruz.
This is the worst harassment. It's like a dictatorship, this town.
That's right.
It's not a peaceful town anymore. It used to be a great town.
And this is an older guy, I mean, it's 50s or 60s, who happened by. Seen him around Santa Cruz for about 30 years. He was really bemoaning the situation where police are being used to hassle people who are simply doing something as innocuous as sitting down at a homeless kind of feeding that's happened. And it's kind of linked up to Orlando, what we were talking about earlier. It's another attack on homeless people in public places and those who empower them.
Yeah, sure.
Now they got dictators running.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I'm just making sure because there's other rules. I can tell you the rules if you like to know.
Officer Forbes is going to tell Paul the rules.
Sir, please.
Okay. So each square is 2 feet by 2 feet, okay?
Okay, Officer Forbes is telling Paul the rules of where you can sit and where you can't sit.
You can't sit within 50 feet of the
chain. You need a proclamation on both ends.
Okay. So in this area, probably one of the spots you can sit. Nice sunshine right over there. Or it's the second tree back there, so find it with the rules of no smoking and all that stuff.
Police enforcing ridiculous rules downtown. Do not sit within 14 feet of a building. That is taking up police time. Car double parked here, and two police officers three police officers telling people about the sitting rules in Santa Cruz. See, this building, even though it's vacant, you can't sit within 14 feet of a building in Santa Cruz, particularly if you're poor, because these officers need something to do. In a way, it's a job program for police officers. Two squad cars, count them. Your taxpayer dollars at work. Two squad cars. Why? To harass homeless people for sitting within 14 feet of a building. That's what these three good officers are doing.
And they're paid well for this job. Seems kind of foolish to me, but it's our Santa Cruz City Council and Mayor Coonerty at work. And Officer Forbes will now hopefully return to his car and to a real activity, a real public defense. Officer Forbes?
Get out of my face. I don't want to talk to you. About it.
Well, you don't have to talk to me. I'm just standing here.
There you are.
Right.
So why are you pinning this in my face?
Because I don't like what you're doing. You're not just standing here. You're using my money to harass poor people.
Your money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I gave him a warning, so how is that harassment?
If I warned you not to sit down, that wouldn't be harassment? Come on. Come on, it's harassment. You know it is. And it's a bad part of your job. You've got better things to do than this.
You got a call about a complaint.
You got a call that someone was sitting and it was a complaint? Why didn't you tell them you have better things to do? I mean, you know, you've got rapes, murders, you've got serious stuff going on. I hope at least not. I don't know. You guys tell me. What's going on? Investigation. We have a lower crime rate in Santa Cruz. Sorry, Officer Winston is here.
Lower crime rate than what?
There you go. Sorry, what is this? Well, we're waiting for a radio broadcast.
Oh, there's 40 to 50 subjects blocking the sidewalk at the table set up, handing out food.
Okay, well, that is not people sitting by the building, and nobody was blocking the sidewalk when you arrived. So, therefore, you just wasted 10 minutes of everybody's time here.
My time's not wasted.
Oh, no, you get paid for it, but they waste our money. That's the problem.
He's paid whether he's here or whether he's there.
Yeah, but there is a better place to be than here, because you don't want to harass people, Officer Warren.
Wasting the city's money.
No, it isn't. Not really. Not really, because it's guys that are out here with badges and guns doing bad work that cause the kind of problems, I think.
Hey, well, just so you know, there's another rape case solved.
Rape?
Yeah.
Have you been solving rape cases? What's your rape solving rate, by the way? You know, it's interesting. There is a very low rape closure rate in Santa Cruz.
That's like 4 years old information.
Well, give me the new information. What is it?
Do your homework.
Well, you don't want to tell me? You don't want to tell me? You don't know, do you?
There's headlines every day.
Well, tell me. What's the rape closure rate this year? You're not going to tell me. This is an example of police officers using time and money. They won't give out information to people.
Do I have
when it's requested?
No.
Well, what information do you have?
They're solving another case.
Well, I'm glad you solved another case, but I'm talking about the rape closure rate. You just said it was lower than 4 years ago.
What I'm saying is, again,
is it lower?
Yes, it is.
Well, okay, now, how much lower? Do we know?
Talk to Zach Friend.
Well, I'll try to do that.
Yeah, there you go.
But as far as I know, I'm not aware that it's dropped precipitously. That we're 13% compared to 39%.
4-year-old information.
What I'm saying here, and actually we've talked about this on free radio with Jillian Greenside, who's a sort of a rape counselor up at UCSC, a founder of the Santa Cruz City's Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, is that Santa Cruz 3 or 4 years ago had a rape closure rate. That's not the right phrase, but it's sort of close to it. That is, say, cases where actually a suspect was found and arrested, not necessarily prosecuted, of 13% compared to 39% statewide, and also in towns of this size. So it's a very low rate. She was very comparatively. She was concerned that there were real investigative problems in the way the police did this, and that the police have never resolved those issues. And as far as I know, I've not heard from her, and I believe her as an authoritative source over Officers Winston, Forbes, and Warren, who were the three officers there. Frankly, because they aren't, you'll notice, I'll ask them direct questions, they don't give me any meaningful answers. They just tell me to go do my homework. And of course, this is all a diversion, because what they're doing is they're spending time and money harassing poor people on the sidewalk, when the original complaint had nothing to do with sitting on the sidewalk. It had to do with people blocking the sidewalk. And the blockage of the sidewalk would obviously not be involved with two people whose backs were up against a closed building and a sidewalk 20 or 30 feet wide. So we have a situation where the police just don't want to acknowledge that they're taking an opportunity to harass poor people.
Again, you get 4-year-old information.
Unless there's a radical change, we're still concerned about the issue, right?
Yeah, it's bad reporting.
Well, we can always do better reporting, but you can also do better policing than doing this kind of bullshit downtown. Come on,
great.
Man.
Good.
You know that.
A lot of compliments today.
Officer Winston?
Yeah, a lot of compliments. That's the best you can come up with.
Well, I'm not trying to come up with anything. I'm trying to make sure that you guys do something else with your time. Fruitless, I know, because you guys are paid to do this, but I think you should be publicly embarrassed for doing this, and it's no—it's nothing personal.
No, he's doing a good job, actually. He's recognizing
public speech.
You know, I mean, I have no problem with this man. You got three policemen here for what?
Got called here,
huh?
Got called here.
The guy is doing a good job, by the way, who this is the older fellow who I was talking to. He's talking about me, not about the police officers.
Who got called? Who called you? I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, why do you guys build a cremator on one end of the...
You go to a city council
and let Cooney... Listen, I've known Cooney for 40 years. Rutkin, that whole group. They're together, they sleep together.
You're telling me how you feel, it's not going to change anything.
Well, listen, but you got three policemen here getting high paid jobs to harass.
How much money do we make?
I know.
Well, I don't know, but you're not working for nothing.
Are we hiring them?
Pardon me?
It's not very environmentally friendly.
You're not working for nothing, that's for sure.
I didn't say we were.
You don't think you're well paid?
All the way? I'm asking you. You're saying we're highly paid. I'm just asking.
Well, highly paid, you got to be in $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Plus medical coverage and all the rest of it.
More like $70,000 to $140,000 with overtime.
Well, I don't know. I'm
so when they come
according to the Sentinel,
so you can only believe them as far as you
can throw. But you know, look at the three guys out here.
You're a big fan of the Sentinel.
I've never.
Who called
you?
You
put your picture on the front
me.
Page.
Me criticized.
There's nobody
put your picture
you
on the front page. You love that.
Down here.
Nobody called us here. He just radio transmission signal.
Yeah, you love it.
Showing that we were called here.
Well, you know what it is? It's paranoia. It's
possibly.
You like coming down here to go to a close.
And we have a first alarm security guard to add to our security downtown. I'm so happy. We have three police officers. No Nazi saluting downtown.
You've
got to watch out. These people have no respect for the police department. I'm really shocked.
Yeah,
why
no
would that.
To the people who suffered during that time. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Pretty poor.
Well, I want to make sure people don't suffer during this time. That's why I'd like to see you guys doing something better with your time. That's the point. And I will continue to encourage you to do that, both of you. You know, that's just...
What you're doing is not encouraging us.
Well, I'm encouraging you by trying to humiliate and publicly embarrass you, because I think that you're hurting other people by what you do, Officer Winston.
By giving someone a warning that they can't say yes to building up.
On threat of a ticket. I mean,
did you ever hear me threaten to give him a ticket?
You seem very skeptical.
You're the only one who was threatening any kind of a citation.
You seem very skeptical of his perspective, because you seem to say, hey, another three squad cars? Is there a crime wave here? For God's sake, I feel very insecure. Can't somebody do something?
Four. Help them. Four squad cars.
No, wait. One, two, three. I only see three, but three is a lot of cars for one area. Now, I'm impressed with my verbal skills.
Ability?
Not my counting ability. It wasn't me. I didn't count four. Somebody else did. Did you call the car? Did you call the third car?
Where's the buddy? That's what I want.
Yeah, we're waiting for that. These guys have got
three radio cars.
Three radio cars and a police car.
Yeah. Three police cars.
And then the third squad car had shown up to, again, to do what? This was a bunch of people who were getting food on the corner of Soquel and Pacific. And, of course, I was, publicly denouncing these officers, which is a First Amendment right, for wasting taxpayer money, for blocking the streets with their squad cars, for harassing homeless people in pursuit of absurd laws. I mean, that's, you know, and they did, and then they were dialoguing with me in their own way. But it's a really weird use of public time and money. We have about 5 minutes left in the show. If anybody wants to call in, you better do it fast. Looks like Keith is not going to get back in. Keith McHenry, 427-3772. I want to announce, by the way, that the Sub Rosa has an open mic at the Santa Cruz tonight. That's 7:03 Pacific. On the third Thursday of every month, there's a special open mic that showcases women, trans, and femme performers. That's happening tonight. Starts, I believe, at start at 7 or 8. For some reason, I don't have that information. But I know it's happening probably between 8 and 9 at least, for sure, in case people want to check out that open mic situation. Don't know. Not sure. But into the studio, of course, has come the evil and much-awaited Uncle Dennis, who will be giving us our weekly dose of nostalgia from the 60s and 70s, as if we weren't endlessly stuck in the past enough in this particular era. We need to be forward-looking, but what have we got?
old tunes and chanties from a foregone era. Well, I leave it to the listeners to catcall this man out of town, lest he drown you in an ocean of forgetfulness, and you will all lull asleep while we all sink beneath the waves of the fascist scene. I want to thank you, Paul, for being my guest. Any final concluding
thank
comments?
Thank you very much, and I... has been a tribute to the great work of Pat Carey, who's living in San Francisco at age 92 in retirement. And I want to mention, I heard through the grapevine that the annual Rainbow Gathering is going to be this year reportedly in the state of Washington, way up north, just north of Oregon.
Where hitchhiking is illegal.
State of Oregon.
Or was, anyway.
And I
recently
would love to go, but usually there's more police there than the attendees of the Rainbow Gathering at a lot of these annual Rainbow Gathering events.
And I think that's the way it's going to be. Paul, thank you very much for coming on the air.
Oh, thank you.
I know you'll be applying for a membership, perhaps, in the Free Radio Collective.
Yes,
Uncle
I like
Dennis
you.
Is one of the guardians of the airwaves. You'll have to get past him with your commie talk or your socialist nonsense, whatever it is you have, your conspiracy theories, your attacks on our intelligence agencies. We have a caller here. Let's see what we got here.
We just need your application.
Hey there, you're on Free Radio in the dying moments of Bathrop Spears broadside.
Do I fill out something?
Turn down your radio. Hello? Turn down your radio.
Hello?
Turn down your radio.
I don't have a radio.
I'm going to turn you over to Uncle Dennis, who will deal with you as you should be dealt with.
May you find peace in your peaceless heart.
Well, hello, caller. Oh, well. Our faithful caller from L.A. has decided not to stay on the line. However, Robert will be back Sunday morning. Has Thomas decided to come in and grace us with his presence for the wake-up call on Sunday morning?
Well, his excuse last time was he had no vehicle.
Come on. Come on.
I don't know what the story is going to be this next Sunday. Of course, we await him breathlessly.
Anyway, sometime Sunday morning, maybe, Thomas Levitt will come in for the wake-up call. The excuse that he didn't have a car doesn't make much sense because he lives 5 blocks from here.
Really?
Maybe 6. Maybe if you stretch it, 7.
Uncle Dennis, you're exposing our troublesome Thomas's... we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, there are excuses and there are excuses, and then there are lame excuses.
Sure.
Now, if Thomas Levitt was lame...
That would be different.
And he, you know, couldn't walk to the studio from his abode, that might be a different story. But anyway... You are listening to From the Cream to the Dregs, a Thursday evening offering of the music of the 60s and the 70s and beyond, rock and roll, psychedelic, blues, and whatever else we can think of around here. Let's start off with Pink Floyd Live.